What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Ricardo Hernandez, also known as Ricky Brands, and a great episode for you today. Today, we have returning guest, Richard Gage. And if you guys aren't familiar with him, he was a part of founding, creating, starting, and promoting Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. They recently had a fallout, and now he's doing his own thing. We talk about specifically what happened with him in the organization. And of course, we discussed 9/11 because that was a huge part of his life, and he's done so much research on the topic. But we also discussed the parallels between 9/11 and COVID. And since departing from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, he started a couple new projects, one being Richard Gage Unleashed, which is his new podcast. And you can find it just about anywhere you can find podcasts. And it's even available, I think, at least the majority of the episodes on YouTube. So please check it out. I'll put links in the show description. And to the business, this is a value for value show. If you guys get some value out of these conversations, please consider giving some value back. Of course, like I always remind you guys, if you can't financially support the show, and I know that the future is uncertain and we're in some crazy times, don't worry about it. Share the show, review the show, tell people about the show. But if you're in a good financial position and you're not a cheap ass, then consider supporting the show financially. There's plenty of ways to do it. We have a Patreon page. We have a PayPal account if you want to donate. Patreon is for people who want to donate every month. And everybody who does, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. That's probably one of the best ways of supporting the show because I can count on that money every month. And then we also have a crypto wallet if you want to send Bitcoin. We have a merch store and we're working with a new merch company. It's a bigger company. So we're sending things out quicker. We're getting many more new products. So check out the Ripple Effect Podcast merch.com. That will bring you directly to the merch store. And I have some new designs that I just released and some more on their way. So please check out the Ripple Effect Podcast merch.com. Or you can go to the Ripple Effect Podcast.com, click on support, and you'll find all the things I'm referring to. Other ways of supporting the show is listening or watching the Ripple Effect Podcast on Rockfin, which is a YouTube alternative or a video platform, a new video platform. And if you're looking for a alternative to YouTube where you can find alternative media, check out Rockfin. There's tons of free content. You can download the app, watch just about everything for free. And then most content creators have a little bit of premium content, which I also do. It's a show called Ricky Rants. You can check it out there. And you can also check out all the many, many content creators that are on there. Many of them that have been on this show or my other show, The Union of the Unwanted. Other ways of supporting the show is checking out my music, which you can find the links in the show description, or you can go to theripplefectpodcast.com and click support, like I mentioned. And last but not least, the University of Reason, which was created by my dear friend Richard Grove. If you haven't listened to him recently on the podcast, please do check him out. He goes much deeper into what the University of Reason can offer, what value get out of it, and how they help you get the most value out of yourself and your life. So it's an awesome partnership. I've been a fan of Richard's for a long time. He's helping people help themselves and maybe find the motivation or community that can help them take the next step in their lives and do something more fulfilling. And of course, as you guys know, I'm a big fan of that. So check out the links in the show description. And just by clicking and signing up or clicking and checking out his class, his website, you can help the Ripple Effect Podcast. So another great way of supporting the show. That's it, guys. Enjoy this conversation. Many more to come. I have tons of great interviews that I can't wait to release. So keep a close eye on the Ripple Effect Podcast RSS feed, and I'll talk to you guys in the next one. Peace. Kind of give a little bit of your origin story of some of the stuff you've been involved in that people might know you from, and then some of your new projects.
Great. Well, pretty exciting to be here again with you, Ricky. I've had quite a ride. 15 years ago, I just woke up to what was really going on with regard to 9/11 and outside 9/11. I mean, 9/11 was a huge domino. I became aware of it through listening to David Ray Griffin in 2006. And I was just blown away. I'd never heard any alternative theory as to how these towers came down. And I mean, not an inch. I mean, I was a flag waving Reagan Republican ready to go into Afghanistan and Iraq and get those bastards who did this to us. That's pretty common, actually. And I got hit. I mean, I got hit hard. He was talking about evidence at the Twin Towers that suggested that they were controlled demolitions. I mean, this was unbelievable to me. He tried to convince me that there was a third tower that came down that day. I'm going, what? I'm an architect. I'd know if there was a third tower that came down on 9/11. Well, it turns out I'm one of 90,000 members of the American Institute of Architects. We didn't receive one bulletin on the third worst structural failure in modern history after the Twin Towers. So not one. I mean, it's just been swept under the rug. Building 7. I learned that it was a 47-story skyscraper that after witnesses heard explosions at 5:20 in the afternoon after the Twin Towers came down, it drops like a rock straight down uniformly, symmetrically into its own footprint in under 7 seconds. Free fall acceleration, which means as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky, which means that not one of the 80 columns in this building gave any resistance to the collapse of this building. Well, where did they go? Maybe it had something to do with those explosions that witnesses heard before the building went down. Well, it looks exactly like a controlled demolition. So that just launched me. I started doing massive research in 2006. I found out that there's 9/11 truth groups all over the country trying to raise awareness and wake people like me up. And I said, well, gosh, there's lawyers for 9/11 truth. There's firefighters for 9/11. Well, I wasn't firefighters yet, but there was scientists for 9/11 truth, pilots for 9/11 truth. So where are the architects and engineers, for Christ's sake? These are buildings. Where are the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth? And I go, oh dear, this baby's falling on my shoulders. So,
well, it was amazing because I'm actually in the construction industry too. We have a little family construction company. We went in business in 2003. We do road construction mostly. So we're typically doing, you know, curb and concrete. I'm Portuguese, so it's like Italians and Portuguese, we're always doing concrete work. That's kind of our specialty. So that's the type of work we do. But being on site with engineers and architects, I can vouch, you were right. I mean, there's so many architects and engineers that I would talk to that I was curious on, like, their take on the building. And I would bring it up to them, you know, after a meeting, or if they're coming in just to see how the job's coming along, it would come up in conversation. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, what's your take? I'm like, you're an engineer. You know, I'm like, what's your take on Building 7? And the majority of people did not even know anything about Building 7. And, you know, it was, like you said, it was kind of surprising because I would assume because of your knowledge of, like, buildings and much your knowledge of how a structural building works or would collapse is much higher than the average person, that maybe people in that type of industry would be fascinated, and maybe it would be a good just conversation that be sparked at the job site, or people would talk about, but nobody talked about it. It was like nobody brought it up, nobody talked about it. Most people didn't know anything about it. But when you brought it up to them and you did look at it logically and you just said, hey, what do you think? Like, doesn't this seem weird? They would do what, like, many of you guys did, and that's not jump to any conclusions, but at least take the first step of saying something about this doesn't look right and it doesn't seem right. And I know when you were on the conspiracy or this conspiracy social club with my dear friend Sam Tripoli, who hosts the Union of the Unwanted with me, I remember
that was fun with that, Brian.
Yeah, Brian's awesome. I love Brian because you can push back and it's funny to watch the odd couple of him and Sam go at it because it's so it is the odd couple. But you know, I think one thing that kind of I noticed with Brian, he did the same thing that a lot of people do, and that's immediately they want you to say, well, how did the explosions get there? It's like, well, let's take baby steps. Like, does this look normal? Does this look, like you said, resistance? Like, we understand resistance. If there's something burning at, you know, this floor, this top floor, then the steel that's at the bottom floors don't melt because they're not burning at that heat. So even if you make the argument that the heat at this area of the building is hot enough to melt steel, as the building falls or collapses, once it reaches to the metal that hasn't been burning at that heat, there should be some resistance. It should slow. So like all these logical things that people kind of dismiss, because I think it's kind of hard for people to get to the conclusion that maybe it could have been prevented or maybe it was intentional. So because of that very hard to believe possibility, I think your first reaction is to dismiss it. But what Brian doesn't understand is that we all kind of went through that, right? You probably went through that yourself.
Oh, yeah. And the 14 other architects at the firm I worked for in 2006 went through that. They thought I was nuts just talking about it. But then I put together a PowerPoint presentation, which I borrowed from Stephen Jones, and bought them pizza. So they had to come, right? A free pizza. 14 of them. Most of all of them skeptical. All of them, after the 45-minute presentation, agreed with me. Yeah, oh my God, these are controlled demolitions. They all raised their hands, agreeing that, and they all signed the petition that I started, demanding a new investigation, and that you had to be an architect or an engineer to be on this petition. So that was the first 14 plus myself, 15 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation, signed on to the petition at the organization that I founded 15 years ago now, which still is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So over 15 years, we've now assembled 3,500 architects and engineers. But in September, I outgrew AE 9/11 Truth because I needed to be talking about things that were beyond the narrow scope of the World Trade Center destruction, which we had confined ourselves to. So I'm out on my own now after 15 years. We launched RichardGage911.org. That's our new website, RichardGage911.org. And we've got all kinds of new things. So I'm bringing all the old with me. We've got the presentations that I've done over 15 years, 700 of them almost in two dozen countries in 100 American cities. The radio interviews, over 600 of them. The webinars that we've been giving weekly now for 5 years. And all of it is over here now at Richard Gage 911. And on top of that, we've got a video podcast that my wife and assistant, Gail Gage, is helping me with. We team up and bring experts and advocates in the 9/11 Truth Movement and beyond. We have got Joe Perkins coming up in next week or a couple of weeks. We've got, he's the Confessions of a Hitman guy. And then we've got Foster Gamble coming up like Thursday here at Richard Gage 9/11.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think it's John Perkins.
John Perkins. What did I say, Joe?
Maybe.
John Perkins. Thank you very much. Sorry, John. He's a good man. Very aware of 9/11 truth, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. But his book was
some incredible guests.
Maybe being a part of that organization, even though you guys did amazing work and you were kind of the face of it for so long, that maybe it did restrict you a little bit from diving deeper into these other topics you might be curious with?
Well, yeah, it did, because we represented 3,500 architects and engineers who signed a petition not to analyze, investigate, or even talk about the disease that's going around, which is what I was wanting to do. But the World Trade Center. So I had to be very careful on and off stage in speaking, because when I speak, I kind of represent AE 9/11 Truth, at least I did until September. And so, you know, that cost us in the 9/11 Truth Movement, actually, because Spike Lee had interviewed me for 2 hours last year, and he was going to put a half hour of that up on HBO. And he got incredible resistance. And Slate Magazine put my comments about COVID in his face. And it's a toss up whether that was, you know, highly influential in his decision to pull that half hour segment, but pull it he did. And we lost the opportunity to reach millions of people on mainstream television. And that was real sad for all of us. And I take some responsibility for that. But he did come out and clarify that he said he had no choice. And that was just a couple of weeks ago. So,
do you think HBO would have went ahead with it? I've heard this story about, and you know, I could sympathize with you, because I know that, even though I don't think it was your comments that did, you know, end up getting it pulled, I can see how you can feel guilty because of the what if questions that will circulate in your head. But like, do you think they would actually, because I would think that maybe at the last second there was going to be some resistance anyways. And even if there isn't, if because COVID's become so political, when you look at, like, you know, for a long time, people just couldn't look at COVID logically the same way they couldn't look at 9/11 logically, because it was such an emotional experience. It's almost like you're still dealing with the trauma of going through it, that you get this quick emotional response. And after people kind of disconnect or have some distance from it, and you can look at it like it's a historical event, then you can kind of start looking at things more logically. Because as you know, as well as I do, people like us who would spark these conversations about 9/11, very often you would have the same type of emotional response as you would about COVID the last couple of years. People would get very upset. People wouldn't listen to what you had to say. People would get emotional. Every discussion would turn into an argument. And now it seems like, because we're quite a bit away from that, those events, people can look at it a little less emotionally and more logically. And I think COVID might be the same thing. You're seeing it now with, like, a lot of people who hated Trump and maybe had a stance on COVID more because of the political, because it was political, and less because of, I guess, observing the facts and coming to a conclusion. And now that COVID is less used as a political weapon, because Trump's not in office, you know, regardless.
Well, the narrative is falling apart on them, and Fauci's like been sequestered or something.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like, all it took was Ukraine to be invaded for COVID to just disappear. You know,
we need a war. Well, let's get them off of this topic and give them a war. Now we're all afraid of dying in a nuclear war. So we got the next trauma induced psychological operation coming.
Yeah, you're right. So I wonder if eventually, because if he sits down with you, and I've seen you talk many of times, I know how much evidence and information and how well thought out, you know, your statements are. There's no way you didn't plant the seed of doubt in his head. And I'm sure that at some point he's going to go down that rabbit hole again. And I think that there's still hope, thanks to your interview, regardless of if it ever sees the light of day or not. Thanks to your interview, I think one day he could revisit the project.
I hope so. In the meantime, it'd be nice to have it leaked out so that we can play it to the American people.
Wink, wink. Any of you tech guys out there?
Yeah.
So now that you're diving into other topics and other things, what other subjects and topics can people look forward to on your website and on your, because now you are on YouTube. You're one of the few truth tellers that are still on YouTube. So if people are looking for some good content on YouTube, here's another channel you can subscribe to. What can they see on your channel? Is it just interviews, any personal videos or anything like that? And what type of interviews are you going to be giving?
Yeah, I tell the story of what happened at AE 9/11 Truth in a video. Very personal podcast, and I have my written statement right there available from the front page and of richardgage911.org. And I also have the new quarterly conference series, 9/11 Con. And this was an idea that, you know, we got to bring the 9/11 truth movement together. So one of the most divisive components of the 9/11 truth set of issues is the Pentagon, a very gnarly issue, which has created a lot of disruption because there are competing theories out there, and the proponents of these theories don't all get along with each other, to say the least. But we're bringing them all together Saturday, this Saturday, March 19th, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We have an all-day conference where we're bringing four theories and four major researchers, beginning with Barbara Honegger, who believes that a plane was blown up outside the Pentagon and explosions inside the Pentagon, but at a different location, primarily in terms of the plane destruction near the helipad, 100 feet north of the official site of the plane impact, as told by the narrative. So that's theory A. Theory B, we're bringing back Thierry Masson from France, who originally wrote a book, Pentagate, in 2002, which has created an international sensation, translated into eight languages. And this book just opened it up. He made a game called Hunt the Boeing. You know, where's the Boeing? He suggests that no plane hit the Pentagon. He suggests that a missile hit the Pentagon. He'll be here also Saturday, March 19th. That's theory B. Theory C brings the citizens investigation team theory that a plane did approach the Pentagon, but then flew over the Pentagon. This will be represented by Craig McKee and Adam Ruff. And so each of these have an hour and a half to present with slides and then answer questions from the other presenters submitted in writing. Then we go to theory D, which is the team of David Chandler and Wayne Costa, who suggest and show evidence that a plane did hit the Pentagon. And so that's been quite controversial, because I think most in the 9/11 truth movement don't hold that view. So we're going to be able to evaluate these different theories critically over the span of 12 hours. And then everybody will have an opportunity to ask any of the speakers questions at the in the final 2 hours. So this is really quite a day, quite an event for the 9/11 truth movement. And we're all very excited to be hosting it, Gail and I. And this is all available on our website, very readily apparent at richardgage911.org.
When the COVID thing was happening, did all your research in 9/11 kind of help you see the parallels in regards to censorship and the media lying and manipulating the facts?
Well, I certainly became aware of that, because I don't watch CNN. That when I do, I my stomach just curls up into a knot, because I do not like being lied to. So I do my investigation with the America Frontline doctors, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Rashid Batar, David Martin, Reiner Fulmich, and Del Bigtree, and the guests that they bring on, Carrie Medej, incredible researchers that are completely shadow banned, banned outright on YouTube. In fact, I've got a strike on my YouTube channel for just mentioning very, very briefly, what I had originally said about COVID.
You can say it on here.
Censor myself these days.
Yeah, you don't have to censor yourself on here. I've already been kicked off YouTube, I'm on every video platform except YouTube. I'm on band.video. I'm for free speech. I'm for people being able to get all the opinions and perspectives and conversations, and then they can decide for themselves what makes the most sense. And so you, when people would come on YouTube, I remember when I had Dr. Robert Malone on, and I had same thing, I had Dr. Peter McCullough on, I had Dr. Carrie Madej, like you mentioned, so many great people, Dr. Pierre Corey, Dr. Jessica Rose, and I'm just like, you know what, like, don't worry about censorship. If I get kicked off YouTube, it's all right. Most people listen to the podcast, they don't watch it anyways, but there's plenty of alternative platforms out there that I think people are going to migrate to, because people like yourself and people like myself were getting strikes and having to get censored. But I have heard you say this, and I think it is true. There's a lot of people on YouTube that we still need to reach. And that's why if there is shows like yours that can, you know, tiptoe that line and get people exposed to this information, it is important. Because I know some people just completely abandon it. They're like, screw YouTube. But I'm like, yeah, but, you know, some of the platforms that we're on, like Rockfin and BitChute and Odyssey, they're great platforms. But a lot of people that are on there already agree with us or know some of the information. And that's why it's important for people to you know, if you can, still try to get some content on YouTube, and hopefully that becomes a red pill that gets them down those rabbit holes and eventually leads them to these other platforms. So, I think, you know, it's good that people like you are still on YouTube and trying to reach those people, because I think we do need to do that.
Yeah, because, you know, that's where a lot of the public's ears are, that and Facebook, even though these are incredibly dangerous and in the way of official narrative propaganda on these false flag operations. You know, if we can, whatever we can get out on those platforms to catch their ear and to wake them up is still worthwhile. So I don't want to lose that platform. So I do censor myself, and you know, that turns my stomach into a knot also.
Have you ever thought about doing a uncensored version of your show on maybe another platform, and or maybe doing subscriber to help with, like, you know, supporting your work and stuff like that? Because people would
probably a subscribing platform, Substack. It's available on our website. People can get our emails. They have the opportunity to support us at $7 a month, which is our basic level of support, which is really helpful. And you know, because I went from AE 911 Truth, I had a salary, you know, that supported, I could pay my mortgage. Well, things are different now. I don't have 80,000 on my email list anymore. I got 1,000. We're trying to build that up. It's going to take some time. So yes, we have that support mechanism in place. We have other platforms too, 10 other platforms, including YouTube, to reach, I think, primarily those who are already aware, but at least we're bringing them the information and arming them with the ability to go out and speak intelligently based on scientific forensic evidence and the eyewitness testimony that we do have available on our website. I think there's a lot of misinformation about the World Trade Center itself out there, even among the 9/11 truth community.
Do you, now that you're not, because I felt like because you're representing the group and organization, you didn't dive too deep into your own personal opinions, which I think was good, because it did help people. It gave them one less thing to use as a weapon to dismiss you. You know, it's like, oh, he thinks this or he thinks that. You know, it's like, oh, here's the evidence, here's the information. You decide, you know, what you want to do with it and where you go with that. But now that you're unleashed, right, is it easier, or are you more open to discussing maybe some of your theories on, you know, what were the intentions of 9/11? What are some of the theories that you agree with or disagree with? Because you're right, there are a lot of conflicting theories, and I don't want to put you on the spot in regards to, like, bashing anybody's theory, because one thing I do feel like, and I'm sure you probably agreed, was a huge issue with the 9/11 truth movement, is we started turning on each other. People would get mad at somebody because they disagreed with their theory. I'm like, if they're either way, I'm like, regardless what they believe or don't believe, I'm like, if we're all trying to expose corruption, conspiracy, expose a event that we were lied to about. Like, regardless if we have difference in opinions on maybe some specifics, like, you're still on our team. You're on my team, you know, like, you're on team humanity, right?
So yeah. Right. Save the world together. No, that's a great point. There is a lot of divisiveness. And yes, I have branched out, but it depends on what platform that I am on. If I'm speaking at a conservative platform that, for instance, isn't necessarily, well, I'll stick to the World Trade Center evidence. If I'm at the Red Pill Expo, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I've got a little more freedom here. But what people are expecting of Richard Gage, former CEO of AE 911 Truth, in large measure is the evidence for the explosive destruction of the three World Trade Center towers. And that's what I do best. That's what I've researched. That's what I know. That's what I know how to deliver. My opinions on other subjects are really just largely opinions based on limited research, not 15 years of research. Even if I've watched, 100 videos now on COVID, I don't consider myself an expert by any measure. I'm certainly not a doctor and certainly not a virologist, but I will have them, to the extent that they're willing to come, and they have, on my show. We interviewed Dr. Andy Kaufman. We interviewed Dr. Rashid Batar. They have a lot to share. I don't have the audience that you have yet, and I'm starting over. But as it grows, I think we'll get more experts like Reiner Fulmich, maybe RFK Jr. I would love to have Catherine Austin Fitz and some of these very important names, Dale Bigtree, who's very aware of 9/11 and who wanted me on his show, Highwire, when he started it. We had met it both as speakers at Anarchapulco. The Dr. Rashid Batar is bringing me as a speaker to his next advanced medicine conference in San Antonio in May. I'll be speaking on 9/11. He didn't bring me there to speak about COVID. He wants the 9/11 truth as a case study to help people make the jump from believing everything their government and CNN, et cetera, says, to thinking for themselves and realizing that we've not been told the truth about one of the most impactful events in our lives, 9/11. And once people, you know, realize that, oh my God, it's not just COVID, which Dr. Batar talks very eloquently about, it's 9/11. And what else is it? People are going to be talking about JFK. So they see these string of false flag operations, which our own government is using against us in a psychological set of operations to manipulate us to go to war. Well, what are those wars? JFK was taken out and we got into the Vietnam War through the false flag operation of the attack on the Pueblo. USS Pueblo, was it? And Gulf of Tonkin incident. And then the 9/11 got us into our 9/11 wars, a $6.5 trillion global war on terror with the expansion of the Pentagon budget by $48 billion, which was the goal of the Project for a New American Century, which established on their website that absent a catalyzing and catastrophic event like a new Pearl Harbor, this goal and other goals they had, such as regional hegemony in the Middle East, would take a long time if they could ever be achieved. So we know, and from their own words, what they're doing there. It's just that we have to put it all together. And yes, I can step out of the World Trade Center now, the narrow confines of that, because I'm not specifically representing 3,500 architects and engineers anymore. I'm representing myself, and I'll reference AE 911 Truth and their petition, which is very powerful, because they're still very relevant. But now what I can do is something that they cannot do. I can go out there and connect all these dots and in a more comprehensive way to the extent that I'm capable. And I only have so much time, so I can't research everything, but I can refer people to other experts, and I can have those experts on my new podcast. So I think I can do a better job for the 9/11 truth movement and the truth movement overall at this point, and I mean, especially by exposing the war of the current false flag operation, the disease, the false disease that's going around, and the false solution for it, the emergency genetic therapy that is being or has been tried to been forced upon us all. So, and how dangerous it really is. That is a war not against a foreign body like 9/11 and JFK operations were designed to promote, but this is a war against the American people, in fact, the people all around the globe, because the cure, as usual, with the deep state is much more dangerous than the original problem that they created. I think this is what needs to be exposed to the American people, and I'm glad that I have the opportunity to do that now on my new platform.
Well, if I can help with, if you're ever looking for contact information, any of the doctors that have been on my show, or if you want to connect with anybody, let me know. I'm more than happy to help you get everything launched.
That's incredible. If you could connect me with Peter McCullough and David Martin and Carrie Medej,
they've all been on my show.
I would give anything to have them on my show. And Dell Bigtree, of course.
James, who is his, does the booking for him. I've worked with him throughout the years. I've always been very similar to yourself. Like, you have that one event that really like red pilled you and kind of opened your mind, and you're really passionate about. I've always really been in the medical freedom, and you know, since the beginning of this podcast in 2013, I've always had doctors on. I've always been really into health and nutrition, and I could kind of foresee the lies and how big the influence of big pharma. That was something, because we talk a lot about the military industrial complex and just their influence, and I'm like, well, big pharma is growing and growing, and they're spending more on lobbying, and they're spending more on marketing, on news stations. And it's like, well, if military industrial complex can lie to us to get us to be motivated to go to an unjust war, big pharma will have the same type of influence, if not greater. And what can they do? You know, what can they pull off? And you've kind of saw what happened, you know, during 2020, just the censorship, the, you know, all the character assassination. If you just mentioned, I mean, Dr. Robert Malone, when he was on my show, I mean, we were talking about it. Like, it's hilarious that he gets called an anti-vaxxer, even though he actually got the COVID vaccine. And, you know, same thing with Dr. Peter McCullough. He's in tons of debt with lawsuits and all this stuff. I mean, the guy is, there's very little to gain in regards to doing what they're doing. And Dr. Peter McCullough is one of the most, you know, he has some of the most peer-reviewed studies and been published so many times. I mean, this guy's a very respected guy in not just his field, in the whole field of medicine. And really, he had very little to gain to be outspoken like this. But it was really just a desire to want to do something because they knew something wasn't right. And my hat goes off to all. And the same thing with you, because before COVID, 9/11 was, like I said, they're very similar where a lot of people, even if they were skeptical of what they saw or what they heard and the mainstream media's, I guess, interpretation of what happened, a lot of people didn't speak out because of the fear of being called a conspiracy theorist. Because, I mean, it's literally the same playbook. Like, you get people who even have like a little bit of doubt about the official story. You get them so afraid to even say it publicly, because anybody who does say it publicly gets immediately called a conspiracy theorist, and you're worried about losing respect or causing rifts between you and friends and family. And it was that topic that did the very, very similar thing as COVID. So I'm very excited that, if I can do anything to help you out, I'd love to, because to me, I'm like, who am I? You know, I'm a podcaster. I'm a curious person who has people on, and I like to pick at their brain and share with the listeners a interesting, hopefully thought-provoking conversation. But people like you who were in the field and still were willing to publicly question things, like, my hat goes off to that. I mean, that takes real courage.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, that makes all kinds of sense. So, reaching out beyond the World Trade Center has grown me immeasurably. And I'm gaining courage week by week, month by month here to speak outside. I mean, I was like a fish thrown out of the aquarium. I mean, I didn't have air to breathe, you know. I didn't have water to swim in, and it was a completely new environment for me. It still is. I'm trying to find my feet here. I'll turn into a frog, you know, from a polywog, or maybe it's into a butterfly from the inside the chrysalis. So, but I don't know how to fly yet. I'm just kind of learning. And I think the guests that I'm able or willing to have on and able are growing me too. I mean, we've brought on some amazing people, and we've got a lot more room to grow here. As I mentioned, we'd also like to have Catherine. I mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz. I don't have contact information for a lot of these people, so it would be awesome for that help.
Yeah, and also speaking of Richard Grove, I can't remember if this was before or after we started recording, but he hit me up with this a mutual friend of ours now, Matt Raymer from Content Safe, and he does. Yes. Yeah, you know Matt. Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, awesome. He's the one who takes my videos from YouTube and uploads them to 10 other platforms.
Yeah,
amazing service this gentleman provides.
Yeah, he does the same thing for my my show. So Matt's awesome.
Content Safe is the name of his company. You can Google it. Content Safe.
Yeah, contentsafe.co. He's an amazingly intelligent IT guy who also believes in freedom of speech and helping content creators. So it's a great mixture of the two. And thank God for people like him, because he really helped a lot during the whole COVID situation when we were being censored everywhere. I mean, I had interviews with like Mickey Willis that iTunes, you know, wouldn't let people see for a couple days, and all this stuff. It was just constantly having issues with shows being uploaded. So, I'm a big believer, like, give everybody the information, let them decide for themselves. We shouldn't let Big Brother decide for us what we can or cannot think or believe or which ideas we can and cannot entertain. In regards to that, like when you listen to all these different perspectives on 9/11, were you conscious about that too? Like, because there's so many conflicting opinions on like what hit the Pentagon, was the Pentagon hit by a missile? Was it a plane? Did they, you know, did you explore everything and kind of do the same thing of like, you didn't mind going down specific rabbit holes and entertaining, even maybe some of the perspectives that seem a little far out?
Well, regarding the Pentagon, all of us in the 9/11 truth movement agree that nothing should have hit the most highly defended building in the world, particularly over an hour after the Twin Towers were both hit. So this is an unacceptable premise from the very beginning. After that, yes, I have begun to step down the rabbit hole of the Pentagon in the creation of this conference, in the bringing together of these very diverse theories who are quite at odds with each other, most of them, and yet there's also plenty of overlap between all of them. So it's a fascinating study, and I haven't developed conclusions, and I don't know that I will, because frankly, Ricky, if the 9/11 truth movement may very well be divided between all of these theories. You know, there's four theories. 25% of people may still believe that a missile hit the Pentagon. 25% of them may believe that nothing hit the Pentagon except explosions. And 25% of them may agree that a plane blew up outside the Pentagon. 25% of them may agree that a plane 757 did hit the Pentagon. So they're going to have the opportunity at this first event of its kind on Saturday, March 19th, to evaluate these theories and come to their own informed conclusions. Because a lot of us, you know, just were shown various pictures, the exit hole, the facade of the plane, whatever, the flight data recording, and just come to conclusions instantly, and hold those conclusions for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years. And so this, seeing all of them back to back, and that are being challenged, each one being challenged by the other presenters in a Q&A for half an hour, that this is a first in the history of the 9/11 truth movement. So we're very, very excited for the 9/11 truth movement to be able to provide this venue, which accomplishes, yes, it takes 12 hours, but it's all in one day. There's the good news. And people are going to have to digest this information and see what happens, including myself afterward, because I haven't made up my mind. And I think if I do make up my mind, I will lose more than half of my viewers. I mean, think about that.
You think so? Now, even your new viewers, I feel like your new audience is going to be much more open-minded to different perspectives, because you're not, you know, you're not just stuck in talking about the one specific topic and whatnot. So I think you're going to probably gather people from all different types of perspectives. Is your mind not made up because you are concerned about, maybe you don't want anybody to be pushed away by your personal opinion? Or is your mind not made up because there's so much good evidence and arguments to be made on so many of these perspectives that you just haven't decided yet which one makes the most sense?
Well, every time I have looked at the different theories, I'm very impressed by them. So I can tell you this, the reason each of these theories have staunch followers is because they're very convincing, and they can't all be right. So I am looking forward to, you know, listening. I'll be hosting the thing. I will be there. I will be listening just like everybody else. I'll be asking some questions during the presentation. I'll be clarifying things. I'll be in the position, not of judge, more of a referee in this case. And in the end, we'll see what happens. It may become clear. And if so, I have to make that decision. Am I going to express an opinion that I held because I might narrow my audience? I think you will be surprised how staunch people do hold on to their beliefs about the Pentagon and how people are unwilling to listen to anything else. That is a flaw. I don't know if it's a character flaw. It's a human flaw. We tend to, you know, form opinions and closely guard those opinions and secure them with an unconscious confirmation bias, which is a very well-researched phenomena with regard to us, and which is why we can't break into the public mind very easily with a new opinion that 9/11 was not as we were told. As Mark Twain said, it's easier to fool people than it is to convince them that they were fooled. So
I say that quote all the time.
We're trying to convince him that they were a fool. That's the uphill battle here.
Yeah, I say that quote all the time, and I always forget that it was Mark Twain. But yeah, it's true. Like, once somebody is tricked, your first reaction when somebody tells you that, hey, your worldview is incorrect, or these events, the way you think they happened, and you've held on to this worldview for so long, like, hey, you know what? That was all a lie. Like, your first reaction sometimes is to, you know, I guess push back and say, no, that can't be, you know, because nobody wants to be looked at as a fool who fell for something. But with me, like, I think Richard and I were talking about this last night, Richard Grove, about how, like, I like to be proven wrong because that makes me one step closer to being right. And it's like, I'd rather be wrong today so I can be right tomorrow instead of just constantly being wrong and sticking to my guns, all out of ego or pride or whatever it may be. There is something in our culture where people don't like to be wrong. Like, even if they know they're wrong, they'll just argue and argue, and it doesn't do you any good. Like, for me, if I'm sharing a fact or a perspective that's incorrect, I'd rather be corrected and then be able to kind of be a little closer to understanding something instead of saying, like, hey, I don't want people to know I got this wrong, so let me just argue back or stick to my guns or not admit that I was wrong. I think that aspect of human beings admitting that you're wrong and admitting that you're willing to admit that you're wrong, like, for me, it makes me think they're more trustworthy, because it means that when they're giving me information, it's not because of tribalistic ideas, or it's not because they planted a flag on a idea and now they just have to defend that idea. It's because they truly believe it, and they've explored all options, and they've explored, you know, all perspectives, and they've come to that conclusion. And if new information comes, they'll slightly change that idea. And that's so important. And that's the beautiful thing about doing podcasts. Like you were saying, like, it is, we grow from these conversations, and the whole podcast thing is a journey, not just for the listener, but the participants. And it really just shows you the power of conversation, because all a podcast is a conversation. And when you're having open discussions and you're sharing ideas and you're challenging ideas, we all grow from it. And sometimes just being asked a question and trying to explain it, sometimes you resolve that answer or those ideas while explaining it, you know, so you get benefit from just discussing them. So without a doubt, you know, it's going to be a fun process for yourself. Have you initially found it hard to do the being in opposite roles, where you used to be the one answering all the questions, now you're the one asking all the questions?
Yeah, it has been a very difficult transition. Ricky, there's a skill to interviewing, and I never developed that skill during the 15 years, because I was the one being interviewed. I still have lots of interviews like this one, for instance, but this I'm more naturally capable of after 15 years and 600 interviews. But it took me 5 years to be comfortable with that, especially with radio, hostile radio shows, some within the 9/11 truth movement, actually a couple of them, and in many, you know, like very conservative, staunch, old guard Republican neocon type radio talk show hosts who would just say, you're just making all this up, you know, we know what happened. Why are you such a conspiracy theorist? Well, I've had shows like that, including Kim Hill in New Zealand, who just went after me like a rabid dog. And she lost a lot of her followers as a result, because it was so obviously an attack and a hit piece that, and I was just talking science. I wasn't talking theory, conspiracy theory. I was just trying to tell how these towers came down. Specifically with eyewitness testimony and forensic evidence. And she's just coming back at me, not listening to anything I was saying, not being willing at all to entertain the facts that are irrefutable, overwhelming evidence, and she took quite a beating from her own followers, which was really great to see. But yeah, and now with me as the interviewer, I'm not like that. I'm inviting people on. I'm asking them questions, but I don't have professional skills as an interviewer, and I haven't had time to develop them. So I'm winging it. So any advice you have to assist me in that process would be invaluable. If there's a particular YouTube video that's the best about how to interview after this conference on Saturday, March 19th on the Pentagon, called 9/11 Con. Get it? Con for conference, con for con job. So we've got a tricky title there. I will have time to say, okay, now that I've been doing this for 4 months, two interviews a week, let's figure out how to do it.
Yeah, well, I think it's a reoccurring theme with podcasters. You see that they all are really embarrassed about the first couple of shows, or maybe even the first couple of hundred shows. I mean, sometimes it takes time to kind of just figure out what's the best way of you doing it. Like when I first started, I used to do the intros. Like I think I was saying this to you before we started recording. I used to do the intros with the guests on hold, like right there hearing me do the intros. And I want the guests to like me, and I want the guests to know that I appreciate them taking time to come on. So I would sometimes have these like rambling on intros where I'm like, Ricky, shut the hell up. But in my head, I'm like, but I didn't mention this, and I want to mention this. I don't want him to get mad that I didn't mention that he also did this and did that. You know, so it's like I couldn't find that balance. I'm like, you know what? I'm doing these intros afterwards. I'm just going to hit record. I'm going to keep it casual, because one of the few talents I have is I'm pretty good at holding a conversation. And a lot of it is because I'm a very curious person. I'm intrigued with people's life. I'm intrigued with people's origin story. I'm intrigued with like what their upbringing was, what maybe red pilled them, what influences that they have in literature or art or music or whatever. And that's why I have so many different people on. You know, I've had Roger Stone on a few times. I've had Professor Richard Wolff, who's one of the leading scholars in Marxism. I'll have all types of musicians on, comedians on, and not always people I agree with, but people that I think will spark an interesting conversation and might maybe challenge what I believe. And so to me, like once it gets flowing, and it is harder to do, I'm sure you find this, like if you're being interviewed in person, it's much easier to get comfortable in that comfort zone, where when it's through Zoom, sometimes it takes a little longer. And sometimes you just don't know how you're going to riff with somebody, right? Like if you're interviewing somebody who's done a lot of interviews and you're like, okay, I can tell they're a fun person to talk to. They're casual, they're laid back. They're not arrogant or anything like that. I'm going to have a fun conversation, but then, that makes you more comfortable. But sometimes there's somebody you like as in regards to like their work and their information, but you struggle to hold a conversation with them. You have them on, you're like, it's like, I'm trying to get you to talk. I want you to talk, but it does. Sometimes that happens too. But I this is like 390 something episode. Oh. And I could count on one hand the amount of guests that I probably wouldn't invite back on. But most of them, most of them are very delightful, people, and they're fun. And, I think we're very similar in regards to, we're not tribalistic. We're open-minded. So we're not the type of people who are going to have somebody on just to criticize their views or to make them look bad. It's like we're honestly just curious and just intrigued with what you think and then why you think that, which I think the listeners are also on that same journey. So they go on that journey with you, where as you're a curious person, Richard's just learning, trying to learn more about the world around him. And while you're in that process, the listeners are going on that journey with you. As you learn, they learn. So that's a really fun aspect of it too. So that conference, are people who might miss it, are they going to be able to hear the or watch the replay?
Oh yeah, we're going to be able to have that opportunity for the indefinite future. So it's incredible.
Well, I know you're a busy guy and you have a lot going on. So let me give you an opportunity to let people know where they can get your show, all the platforms that you're on. Like you said, you're not just on YouTube, you're on other platforms. Also, another question I want to ask you about your new show. I know I've watched it on YouTube. Is it also available on the audio podcast apps like Spotify, iTunes, that type of stuff?
Yeah, we use Buzzsprout to spread our audio podcast to iTunes, Spotify, Apple, all of the big ones. And then we have the video on Odyssey and Rockfin and Minds and Sovereign and about seven others I can't remember off the top of my tongue. I should have that list available.
Probably BitChute, I'm assuming. BitChute.
Yep, BitChute.
Rumble, Mines. Yeah.
Which one? Gold Mine?
No, Mines, right? You said Rumble, Mines, yeah. Rumble, Mines, BitChute, Odyssey. I think Rockfin. Those are kind of the more popular ones at the moment.
And yeah, we're on those.
Awesome, yeah.
Thanks to Matthew Raymer again at Content Safe.
Yeah. He saves us a lot of uploading time.
Yeah, can you imagine having to do that? I was doing that. And I was like, this is taking forever. I can't get any work done.
Yeah, well, you know, the cool thing, like I told Matt, I'm like, the cool thing is audio works that way, right? You upload it to one place. I use Podomatic. I upload it to my host and my podcast host website, and then it goes to all the locations. I'm like, why can't we do that with video? So it's perfect that he kind of saw that hole in the market and found a way of doing it, which isn't easy because every platform has like, their videos are formatted differently. The way, you know, I'm like, Matt, I don't know how you do it. It's like, you know, I sometimes he explains things to me and I'm pretending I'm paying attention or understanding, you know, it's like speaking another language. I'm like, okay, yeah. I trust that you know what you're doing because I definitely
go, Matt, go.
Yeah. He's helped out a lot of people. And, so he's awesome. Shout out to him. And then you're on, Twitter. Are you on any other, are you on Float, Parler, or Getter, or any of the other social media platforms? I thought these were going to be the
Gail
easy questions.
Gail takes care of this. She's our expert. She's we have accounts on those. I don't know that we use them very much.
I thought these were going to be the easy questions, Richard.
Yeah, you'd think I'd be aware of this. I'm trying to get book guests, interview them, and she does all the promotion. So.
Oh, awesome.
We may be on all those social media, but the ones we primarily use are Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn.
Awesome. And
we stream live to those venues.
Oh, awesome. And I'm assuming all that stuff will be found on your website. So I'll put links to your website and any other links that you want in the show description, please send them to me. And what I'll do is once I have time, I'll send you a huge list of possible future guests on your show, specifically doctors. It sounds like that's a rabbit hole you want to go down a little more. So I have a lot of friends in that community. So I'll be more than happy to hook you up and hopefully in the near future, see them on your show.
Very awesome, Ricky. Thank you so much. And yeah, I forgot to mention, finally, our website, which pulls all this together, is richardgage911.org.
Awesome. Thanks, Richard, for all the years of amazing work you've done and for helping, you know, red pill many, many people, I'm sure. And hopefully we talk again in the near future.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Richard.
Hey, thanks. Best of luck with all your new projects.
Thanks.
Take care.
I believe in the ripple effect.